Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, and you are tuning in to KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. This is Dr. Patty, and we're going to be talking about a very sensitive subject on my radio show here called Therapy in a Nutshell. So the topic for today is what I call ultrasensitivity. I've been in private practice for over 34 years, and over many, many years, I have often seen people who are extremely sensitive and at times overly sensitive, and they don't know how to deal with it. And so when I hear people talking about how they are touched so deeply about things and they feel like they can't get away from certain feelings and they can't differentiate between what they should be feeling and what they are feeling, my radar starts going up for maybe they're an ultra-sensitive person. And let me give you a couple examples. And one reason this subject is near and dear to my heart, I will share this with you, is all my life I have been an ultra-sensitive. And myself, like many people, when you are growing up as an ultra-sensitive, you're the one who gets teased a lot. You get teased because people say, well, partly because you're easy to tease. People can get a rise out of you and a reaction. You're the one that cries easily at things that happens. You take things to heart and you just feel like you're wounded very easily, which if you don't know how to handle that, you can look like a good victim and a good target. Ultrasensitives are often bullied, misunderstood, targeted, and you know, for example, your siblings will tease you, and then they'll say, well, can't you take a joke? I was just teasing, and you're sitting there crying. So being an ultra-sensitive growing up, I was always told I was too sensitive and couldn't take a joke, but many people are too. So that evolves from being a kid who's an ultra-sensitive into an adult who's trying to manage some extreme sensitivity. And I have always thought of my own ultrasensitivity or those of the people that I help in therapy as ultrasensitivity is a blessing and a burden. And I often say it's a blessing and a curse, but it's really just a blessing and a burden. It has its wonderful attributes, and we're going to explore those today. And it has its difficult things to manage, and we're going to define those. And I'm actually going to give you some really cool coping skills to embrace your ultrasensitivity, as well as understand it, and then how to manage it in a way that brings out more of the blessings than the burdens. So let's go over exactly what I see as ultrasensitives, and you see if you resonate with this, if it fits for your kind of personality. And look at it this way, too. I see ultrasensitivity as a personality kind of trait. Is it genetic? Yeah, there's some geneticism in there. Almost everyone that's an ultra-sensitive can say, I'm just like my fill-in-the-blank, like my mom, like my dad, sister, like my aunt. They will say they almost always have a family member that's very similar to them. Is it also environmental? Sure. Kids that live in difficult environments or if there's abuse or things like that, they can become ultra-sensitive just for their own safety and defense. So why you're an ultra-sensitive is less important than are you an ultrasensitive, and how do you understand it, and what do you deal with it? How do you deal with it? Okay, so ultrasensitives are often extremely creative. They sometimes even see things differently than the average bear. They might see more intense color or a more intense pattern, and their sensitivity helps them to feel the emotion of things that somebody who's not as sensitive might not feel. For example, an ultrasensitive who's a painter might almost feel the emotion in a beautiful sunset that they're painting. So that ultrasensitivity can really help with creativity and with talented kind of expression. Ultrasensitives are often very intuitive. Now let's take intuitive on a spectrum. Intuitive just in a way of their kind of they understand people, they see the nuance of things, they can kind of read people well. And step that up to they can almost feel the energy in a room. Somebody walks in and they're depressed or they're upset. And they haven't said a word, they haven't done anything behaviorally that the average bear in the room would say, what's wrong? But the ultra-sensitive will say, something's wrong with that person. Sometimes they know the people, which can make them more highly intuitive to what's going on, or they don't know them, and they can still really intuit the emotion that's coming from that person. Now, go down that spectrum and take the ultra-sensitive person who is extremely psychic or has very, the joke we always say is the woo-woo powers. They have a lot of woo-woo. A friend of mine, a very dear friend of mine, calls it the force. They have the force. They can really read things. So that's all part of that ultra-sensitivity. Ultra-sensitives are often very sympathetic and very empathetic. It's important to understand the difference. Sympathy is where you get it, what somebody's saying, and you can kind of intuit how that would be, and you're very sensitive to what's going on. For example, a friend comes up to you and says, I've been diagnosed with cancer. You've never had cancer, but you can kind of sympathize and say, wow, you know, I can understand how that could be difficult. Empathy is where you understand from a personal knowing. So the friend comes up and says they have cancer, and you have recovered from cancer. And you come from a very deep place of empathy because you deeply understand what they're going through. So ultrasensitives are often highly sympathetic and highly empathetic. They also feel the pain of others very deeply. And this can be part of the burden of what happens. They see somebody really hurting, and it can affect them deeply. And we're going to go more into that as the show goes on, because I want to teach you how to recognize that and how to deal with it. They also can cry very easily. It's so funny that when the AT&T commercial comes on or whatever that, you know, is all sappy and makes you cry, everybody in the room will look over and lean over to the ultra-sensitive, and they'll go, oh, Patty's crying again. Or something like that, because they expect the ultra-sensitive to feel what they are seeing as like, oh, this is an emotional commercial, but she's crying. And it isn't always a she. You need to know that. I see as many male ultra-sensitives as I do females. It is a personality characteristic far more than is anything having to do with gender. Okay, so another thing that ultra-sensitives tend to be is sometimes avoidant. Sometimes it's a smart thing to be avoidant because they're avoiding the things that really upset them. For example, I do not watch horror films. I don't watch that kind of stuff because I avoid it, because it really upsets me and it'll give me nightmares, because I just kind of feel like I suck it in and then it's hanging there on my consciousness. I also don't watch shows that have a lot of torture in them. I thought Game of Thrones was absolutely incredible in terms of its acting and storyline, but I simply could not watch it because the degree of violence and the degree of torture in that show tortured me, so I avoided it. In fact, I had to stop watching it. So avoidance can be because it's important that you understand what you're avoiding, and it can also be just kind of instinctual that you don't want to feel that. Ultrasensitives can also isolate themselves. They sometimes can't handle difficult situations such as funerals or large gatherings of people or emotional situations, so they'll isolate themselves and avoid all at the same time. So the list can go on and on about what ultrasensitives do. So if you are starting to resonate with this show and saying, oh my gosh, I think I'm an ultrasensitive, stop and say, what are the ways that you're ultrasensitive? How does that work? And remember that we're differentiating the ultrasensitivity of emotions from the sensory processing kind of oversensitivity. That's a whole different show. But ultrasensitive can also have sensory processing issues that make them even more vulnerable to oversensations. Okay, we're going to go to break. And when we come back, I want to teach you how to figure out where you end and someone else begins.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patty, and you are listening to the beautiful Native American flute music of Randy McGinnis, Native American Flutist of the Year for the Native American Music Awards in 2017. He's won numerous awards, played all over the world. He has 6 CDs, and if you're interested in his music, you can go to Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, CD Baby. You can go to YouTube. You can go to his website, randymcginnis.com. Check out his music, and we appreciate him letting us use it on my show. It's beautiful. Okay, we are talking about ultrasensitivity. We're also live on the air today, so if you have a comment or a question, feel free to call in. Area code 530-605-4567. Real easy to remember those last four numbers, 4567. Call in, make a comment. You don't have to say who you are. You can do it anonymously. And I promise if I recognize your voice, I will not say so. Okay. So we're talking about ultrasensitivity and how it is a blessing and a burden for many people. So my job today is to help you understand it and help you manage it so that you get more of the blessings and less of the burdens. Right now I want to talk to you about one of the factors in ultrasensitivity is that ultrasensitives don't always know where they end and someone else begins. So what happens is when somebody starts to tell you how they feel, or you're noticing that somebody is depressed, your heart goes out to them. And I want you to picture almost physically, like your heart goes out to them, and it almost wraps around them and pulls them into you. So their emotions in that moment feel like they become your emotions. And all of a sudden you're feeling down or depressed or angry or upset or worried, and you start to feel yourself cascading downward and go, I just feel so horrible for you. That is an interesting phenomenon, because when you can kind of feel what someone's feeling, it gives you a very deep understanding of what they're going through, which is beautiful. But if you get lost in their emotion, in their issue, their problem, their sense of being, then it's very difficult for you to be of help to them or of help to yourself. Let me give you a whole different example here. In my private practice, I can often feel the energy of somebody walking into the room. And even though they're not saying so, I might feel like there's some kind of depression or there's something going on, because I'm just really reading them. I'm reading their body language, the emotion on their face, the color of their words as they're speaking. And there's even a physical sensation that I get. I'll be sitting there talking with someone, and I almost feel like they become a black vortex, like a hole that is sinking. And I feel like I'm getting pulled into that eddy, that hole. And when I kind of get it, that it's kind of a God message, it's somebody saying, hey, you need to know this person's super depressed, even though they don't sound like it. I acknowledge that I'm getting the message, and I immediately pull back from that. And I don't have to change anything. I just acknowledge I'm getting it. I'm getting that deepening sensation. I'm getting the message that they might be depressed. I pull back and recenter myself into my own space. And then I will, as appropriate, turn the subject toward, hey, are you really feeling depressed? Let's talk about this. And do that in an appropriate therapeutic manner. But the cue I'm getting is from my ultrasensitivity. And so it's important that I know where they end and I begin. As I pull back and recenter, I'm recognizing this is not my emotion. I am simply tapping into what they are feeling. I can still be caring and kind. I can still be empathetic or sympathetic. And I can also keep my therapeutic distance. And that therapeutic distance does not need to be cold. And it does not need to be just that of a psychologist and a client. It can be what you keep. When you tap into a friend's pain, let's say a friend comes up and says, I just found out my child is very ill. And you're an ultrasensitive who highly resonates with children's issues and children hurting and children ill or people losing their children. And you immediately feel their pain and you tear up and you feel really upset and sad for them. That is a super awareness. You acknowledge that you're feeling that way and you get it. But you also acknowledge that what you're picking up on some is what they're going through. So knowing where you end and your friend begins is huge. It makes you as an ultrasensitive the blessing that's standing there in front of them. Now, if you start drowning in their emotion and they start having to take care of you, you haven't helped them. You've become more of an emotional burden to them in that moment. So this is one of the reasons it's really important that ultrasensitives know where they end and someone else begins. Because almost every ultrasensitive I've known wants to be of help to people. They make very good therapists. They're often in the helping professions like doctors and nurses and things like that because they want to heal. They want to help people. So when you stop and say, what part of this is my emotion and what part of this is possibly my friend's emotion, then you're starting to have that boundary between who you are and who they are. And then you are at a better place to be able to be sensitive and helpful at the same time. Let me talk to you a little bit about what happens when you can't differentiate between where you end and someone else begins. This is often what happens between parents and children. Let's take the example of your child, whatever age, your child might be young, your child might be an adult. Your child comes up to you and says, I want to talk to you, and is going to tell you that they feel that they're gay or that they have some other sexuality issue that is not what you thought it was. So when a parent can differentiate between who they are and who their child is, there's a better chance that the parent is going to truly listen to that person and really hear what they're saying. If they are ultrasensitive, it's possible for them to get lost in what they feel and what the person sharing the information is feeling and get muddied up in that. So in a perfect world, your child comes up to tell you something that could be difficult for you to hear, and you listen intently, and you seek to understand before you seek to be understood. Remember, you've heard me say that lots of times. So you are seeking to understand exactly what this person you love is telling you and sharing with you. And you are not coloring it with your sensitive crayons. You are really trying to understand. Now, at some point in the conversation, especially if you're the person sharing the difficult news with you is a sensitive person, they will allow you to have the room for what you feel. They'll allow you to have the room for the things you worry about for them. But if it's a very open, discussion where everybody knows where they end and someone else begins. It should not be a very detrimental discussion where you're being judged and told what to do and put down, and the parent listening is basically saying, you are an extension of me, and who you are defines who I am. And that's the point I was getting to. When we don't know where we end and someone else begins, then we tend to color them with our crayons, and they become an extension of us. If I can fix you, then I don't have to feel bad. So let's back that off. That's a pretty hot situation sometimes when there's difficult information to be shared. So when that happens, that's a challenge for even the ultra-sensitive or the non-ultra-sensitive. But let's take something a little more benign. You're watching a movie that is extremely emotional, and it's meant to touch your feelings, and it's meant to make you feel cry and feel happy and feel sad and really relate with the actors. Someone who's an ultra-sensitive might go home and be very depressed and have a very hard time and can't separate themselves from where the movie ended and all the feelings and where their feelings began. So it's kind of a mushy boundary issue that you will immerse yourself in whatever emotions are happening in the room or on the screen or in front of you. So the ultra-sensitive also becomes extremely sensitive to things like criticism or feedback or suggestions, even mild suggestions for change. The ultra-sensitive will tend to read into a situation to protect themselves from an onslaught of difficult emotions. And in doing that, they often lose where they end and someone else begins. So this is the first step in really beginning to regulate your ultra-sensitivity. And I'll tell you, if I could snap my fingers and make someone not an ultra-sensitive, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't give up my ultra-sensitivity because I think it makes me a really good therapist. I think it helps me help people. People feel loved by me very often, and I like that. I think part of that is because I'm an ultra-sensitive, and I wouldn't give it up. But I really like it that over the years of my life, I learned how to differentiate between what was mine and what was someone else's. Because when it is your emotion, I can be empathetic, I can be sympathetic, I can be helpful, but I don't begin to drown in what you're feeling. And it's just super important that you begin to recognize that. So before we go to break, I want you to stop and think, where do I lose my boundary? Is it with my spouse that I start to feel like whatever I'm feeling, he's feeling, or whatever my spouse is feeling, we're both feeling the same thing? That's a projection onto a person close to you of what you're feeling. Is it your children? Because we often mesh ourselves up emotionally with our children and define ourselves by whether they're smart or good-looking or athletic or whether they fit societal norms. Is it a best friend that you feel certain your best friend will never have a different opinion, and then you find out they're different politically and you're totally shocked? Oh, my gosh. It's so funny in this political arena today, people, if they like you, they automatically assume you're of the same political persuasion. And it's so interesting to me to watch that happen in people in groups. And if they don't like you, they kind of assume you're of the opposite political persuasion as they are, especially if they're very passionate about their politics. So it's just a funny thing to watch. All right, so I want you just to stop and look. Where are you tending to mesh yourself in with someone else's emotions? What people in your life? What situations? Is it your workplace? Is it your home? Is it your friends? And just kind of take a look at that. And when we come back, I'm going to give you some skills to begin to manage your sensitivity. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. history. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, president of We Back the Blue Shasta, inviting you and your whole family to come to our free 5th annual Elks Lodge event. We'll have canines, canine demos, police cars, fire trucks, helicopter, CrossFit demos, face painters, bounce houses, cornhole tournament, pool and air hockey tables, dignitary speakers, silent auction, We Back the Blue gear, and so much more. Don't miss out on this very unique free family fun event supporting our first responders. Reading Elks Lodge Saturday, 928, 10 to 2, or cornhole 9 to 4.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, Dr. Patty, and we are talking about ultrasensitivity. And are you an ultrasensitive? And how being an ultrasensitive is a blessing and a burden all at once. And my goal here today is to help you understand it and step more into the blessings and less of the burdens. So in this section of the show, I want to talk to you about how to manage your sensitivity. And the first step for that is what we talked about in the last section. You need to know where you end and someone else begins. And the reason you need to do that is so that you can keep your feet on the ground and not go swirling down into whatever they're experiencing. But also because you need to know what are your things to deal with and what are not your things to deal with. When is it appropriate just to seek to understand? But not have to fix, not have to do something, not have to rescue. And that's really important for the ultrasensitive, because many ultrasensitives are the ones that will jump in to their own detriment to try to fix somebody or help them out. They'll give them the last money out of their wallet when they really needed to go buy groceries. They'll project their own feelings of loss and emptiness onto somebody and step in to try and fix it for them when it wasn't even called for or asked for. So if you mess yourself up with somebody else in terms of getting all tangled up with their emotions, you may lose your objectivity of how much you should help and how much you shouldn't. Now, my definition of codependency is when you are helping somebody else to the detriment of you. When you're involved in their issues and their problems and it's harmful to you, that can be codependent. And some ultrasensitives, not all, of course, but some ultrasensitives tend to be codependent. They want to help everybody, fix everybody, make it so no one in the world is ever suffering. And I understand that, but we also have to recognize what is ours to deal with and what is theirs to deal with. And the phrase that helps me a lot is I say, that's not your monkey. And so I will say to myself, Patty, it's not your monkey. Don't go there. Just listen. Just seek to understand. Don't go there. And the vision I have for not your monkey is there's a little herd of monkeys on everybody's back. And you are responsible for feeding and watering your own monkeys. You are not supposed to be feeding and watering everybody else's monkeys. So when you're an ultrasensitive and somebody is telling you how they're hurting or they're sad or they're broke or they're something, the ultrasensitive in you wants to step in and fix it for them. And part of the reason you want to do that is because you want them to feel better so that you will feel better. And I don't mean to make that sound selfish. it's a very altruistic kind of emotion. I really want to help you. I hate seeing you in pain. I'd like to help you get out of pain. So I know you're happy and then I'll feel better. So just know that that's the boundary thing. And when you give yourself permission to know what is theirs and what is yours to feel and to fix, you will stand stronger as somebody who probably can help. And in many, many situations, just listening, seeking to understand what they're saying without fixing is a huge gift to people. And they often don't get that. When you become that person, friends will actually say to you, I know I can talk to you because you really just listen and you don't tell me what to do and you don't judge me and you don't step in and start running all over the place trying to fix things. They will actually appreciate that. So that's the first step. Know where you end and someone else begins. And then the second step is to recognize what is your monkey to feed and water and what is their monkey to feed and water. And I'd like to say we all have one monkey, but most of us have a lot of monkeys. That's just how it goes. And in therapy, you try to understand your monkeys and get rid of some of them and or relegate them to be quiet. All right, so after you've figured that part out, then what I like ultrasensitives to do is to embrace their ultrasensitivity, to say, you know, I feel things deeply and I feel others' pain very readily. And so you give yourself permission to feel. The ultrasensitive whose eyes tear up and they feel compassion and they feel, you know, heartfelt feelings for the person in front of them, it's okay to give yourself permission to do that. A very dear friend of mine who's an incredible doctor is a very sensitive man. And when he hears his patients really hurting, it's not unusual for his eyes to tear up, for him to give them a hug, for him to say, I get it that you're in pain and you're here for us to see what we can do to work on this. And as a doctor, he's got a lot of tools in his tool bag so he can pull them out and start helping them. And you have to remember, they're there asking for help and they are sharing their sensitivity because they want his help. But he also gives himself permission to feel and permission to let the person in front of him see that he's very sensitive. And he does that without any shame. And that's kind of what I'm asking ultrasensitives out there to do. Embrace your emotions. Know that you cry easily. So when you're that person that they lean over and say, oh, Patty's crying at the commercial, you go, yep, because I feel everything. You just embrace that ultrasensitivity and you step into it and you don't apologize for it. You say that's who you are. Okay, so let's go over those again. You're going to know where you stop and someone else begins. You're going to know what is yours to feel and what is theirs. So you're going to feed and water your own monkeys, not theirs. You're going to give yourself permission to feel your emotions without shame. And another friend of mine, I love what he says. He was crying, a big, big burly guy, and he was crying one day. And he said, I handed him a Kleenex. And he said, hey, I'm not wiping these tears away. I've earned them. And I just thought that was so cool because he was embracing his sensitive nature, and it was beautiful. So then the next thing you're going to do is you're going to learn how to hold your emotions. Now, there's a visual I have for this. I'm really visual, so sometimes a visual component helps me help people hold on to stuff. The visual component I have of hold your emotions is you're going to hold the dog poop. And I always say I don't always call it poop, but my producer, Jared, would give me the beep if I said the other word, so I can't. But you're going to hold the dog poop. And what that is you recognize that some emotions have been dumped into your hands, and you are sitting there holding this stinky stuff. And my goal for you as an ultrasensitive, or as someone who's not ultrasensitive, by the way, is to sit there and hold it. You don't fling it around the room. You don't stuff it in your heart. You don't analyze the heck out of it. You sit there and you hold it. And when you figure out what it is and how you got it and how you feel about it and you've really experienced the emotions of it, then you can wash your hands and put it away. The importance of this is that you recognize I am feeling something about something. And instead of just running around the room like a chicken with your head cut off or flinging emotions around or projecting your own emotions onto everybody else, You are sitting quietly and holding what you're feeling. So now let's put this into practical sense. Friend comes over and is talking to you about something difficult. Maybe they're coming out to you about their sexuality. Maybe they are explaining to you that they're depressed. Maybe they're sharing with you that they've got some problems with their child. Whatever, they're telling you something difficult. First thing you're going to do is stop and say, this is their issues. These are their issues, not mine. So I'm going to seek to understand. I'm not going to fix. I'm not going to offer judgment or criticizing. I'm not going to interrupt them with my own story. I'm going to just listen and let them proceed. Then you're going to give yourself permission to feel. You're a sensitive person and you're picking up on their pain or their angst or their sadness. And you feel it as well. Acknowledge that you are feeling that. And, you know, maybe say to them, wow, I can feel your pain. I can feel how heavy your heart is. Cry with them. It's okay. That doesn't mean you have to fix them or you have to change their emotions or you have to run away from your own emotions. You know, everybody thinks if they start crying, they're like the little kid with the finger in the dike. If you pull your finger out, the water's going to flood through the levee and drown you. No, you're going to just feel it. So then when you have a little bit of space, what you're going to do is hold the stuff in your hands and you're going to say, what am I feeling? How did I feel about what this person shared with me? What was I doing as an ultra sensitive? Did I keep my boundary? And you're just going to really experience it. And this is also where you give yourself permission to cry or to overreact in that moment away from your person that you're trying to listen to or help. Because you are really differentiating between your emotions as an ultra sensitive and their sharing with you and coming to you because you are a caring, sensitive person who really listens. So those are some of the steps in managing this sensitivity. And a lot of it has to do with you embracing the fact that you're an ultra sensitive. You're not ashamed of it. You're not apologizing for it. But you're also not using your ultra sensitivity in such a way that it makes someone else's difficulties harder or it puts extra burdens on you that you really don't need. So rather than be avoidant and isolative to what's happening, really notice and listen and feel it and even say, this is what I'm feeling. I'll give you a quick example before we go to break. I have a tendency when I'm really angry to cry. And it used to really tick me off because I thought, ah, darn it, Patty, stop it. Because I'd be embarrassed that I was crying when I wasn't sad. So what I started to do, I don't know, probably 20 years ago, I started to say, I'm not crying because I'm sad. I'm crying because I'm really angry. And I just defined it for myself, and I defined it for the person listening. And the people would look at me and like, go, oh, I don't think they knew what to say to that. But it was mostly for me because I didn't like going away later saying, oh, I just gave the total wrong impression of what I was feeling, and I don't like that. I'm a person who really likes to stand in her truth. And my truth at that moment wasn't, I'm sad, it's I'm angry. So I worked on that. And then eventually I began to learn that when I was angry, I was actually afraid. And that's a whole other show. You can look at Love and Fear in the podcast and listen to that. All right, so we're going to go to break. And we're going to come back and we're going to sum up some of the stuff about ultra sensitivity. Because what I want you to go away from this show is I want you to embrace this ultra sensitivity and feel empowered. Okay, we're going to go to break and we'll be back in a minute.
Celebrating 20 years in business, Five Star Bank is a community business bank serving small to medium-sized businesses and is a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Five Star Bank was founded in 1999 by a group of local entrepreneurs who wanted to create personalized banking services inspired by shared vision and goals. Today, Five Star Bank is among the top 5% of performing banks in the nation for banks of its size. Five Star Bank proudly serves farmers, ranchers, and growers in the agricultural community, commercial real estate developers and construction, those who lead nonprofits, and churches, and entrepreneurs in emerging technology. Five Star Bank is also committed to small businesses through a robust SBA department. They understand that when it comes to business, timing is critical. Their sense of urgency and speed to serve are part of the foundation of their success. Visit 5starbank.com and visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to a North State with no more homeless pets.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, Dr. Patty, and we are talking about ultrasensitivity, whether or not you are an ultrasensitive. And I want to take a minute to do a shout out to my beloved granddaughter who makes me smile. My oldest granddaughter, I have three grandkids and they're amazing and I'm not prejudiced at all. But my oldest granddaughter, who was actually did a show with me here on bullying, she's on the spectrum as she has autism, and she's brilliant and intelligent and beautiful and talented, and she's very kind and very loving. And she is an ultrasensitive, and she would tell you that because from the time she was little, I've helped her learn about ultrasensitivity. But she has kind of a double whammy. She is an ultrasensitive in terms of her emotions and what we've been talking about here today. And she also has sensory processing sensitivity. And so when somebody has a double whammy like that, and the reason I'm bringing Allie Baby, the reason I'm bringing her up is because you need to know if you also have sensitivity to light and sound and texture and touch and food and things like that, and you're an ultrasensitive emotionally, that can be a real double whammy on your senses. So I just wanted to mention that because there's some of you out there probably going, yeah, I'm ultrasensitive to everything, not just emotions. So just a shout out to Allie that I highly admire how much you know at only 12 years old to deal with all of this stuff. You are amazing, and my baby. Okay, so back to ultrasensitivity. When you begin to follow these things and you have some skills, you have to remember that you're going to get better and better at dealing with them. There is a learning curve of how we learn how to deal with things, and the way that learning curve goes, and what I've seen over 30-something years in my practice, is in the very beginning, when you have known virtually nothing about a subject or an emotion or how to do something, you're at this very beginning level of development. So if this is the first time you've ever even thought of the concept of being an ultrasensitive, then you're going, wow, I never thought of that, and I never have put how I deal with things in that context. So then when you grow a little bit more from that, you're listening to how I'm explaining how to do boundaries, how to hold your emotions separate from theirs, how to know where you end, someone else begins. So then what are your feelings and what are not, giving yourself permission to feel, and how to hold those emotions and understand them until you're ready to wash your hands and be clear. So those are the steps again. But when you begin to recognize those things, you're in this next stage of development. And it's not expected that you'll be good at it. You, in this stage of development, you often look back and go, oh, gee, I totally meshed myself with my friend, and I I didn't differentiate between what were my feelings and hers, and I jumped in there and started trying to fix her, and oh, gee, I did that thing that I'm not supposed to do. That's that hindsight, and that is the perfectly reasonable stage in development where you are saying, look what I just did. So if you do that, don't beat yourself up. That's okay. And an ultra-sensitive will beat themselves up a lot. They take things to heart. They tend to loop on things. They're very self-critical. They have a lot of self-doubt. And they loop on things to say, I shouldn't have. Okay, so that's one of the things we want you to not burden yourself with as an ultra-sensitive. So then the next stage of development, you'll be starting to do it, and you'll say, oh, wait, I'm doing that thing where I'm taking her emotions on and I'm making them mine. I'm going to stop. I'm just going to listen. That's the next stage of development. Then in the next stage, as you begin to evolve more, you'll say, okay, my friend's asking me to listen to a problem. I'm going to remember to keep separate from who I am, from who she is, and just listen. Now you step into doing it incorrectly. Then down the line somewhere, you'll say, I'm an ultra-sensitive, and I used to get all enmeshed in people for their emotions and mine, and I really don't do that much anymore because I've gotten pretty good at differentiating between who I am and who they are. So understand that pattern of learning and that pattern of growth. And accept yourself for where you are. So in this ultra-sensitivity, you want to recognize that there are ways to embrace it and really be thankful that you're an ultra-sensitive. And the blessings are far more than the burdens when you start to have these rules for how you deal with things. So the old pattern of how ultra-sensitives tend to take things very personally, and they take things to heart, and they are hypersensitive to criticism because they fear that if somebody criticizes what they did or how they are, that what that really means is that they don't like you. And if they don't like you, they're going to leave you. And if they leave you, you're going to be depressed and upset, and you don't deal with that very well, and you angst over it, and you loop on it, and it tears you down, and you just don't want that to happen. So the ultra-sensitive will often be hyper-vigilant to criticism and hyper-vigilant to somebody saying something negative about them, and they take it personally in an attempt to not overfeel something that they might feel. So that anticipatory worry and that anticipatory grief and loss and abandonment often makes you feel things that you didn't need to feel, or that you weren't going to have to feel. So as you learn to recognize your ultra-sensitivity, the other thing you can begin to learn is how to stand in your truth. And there's a whole other podcast. Go back to my podcast and listen to the one on standing in your truth. When your truth is, I'm an ultra-sensitive, and I tend to be hypersensitive to criticism, and this person is saying something that might mean something's wrong, and I need to listen to that. So here would be standing in your truth. I hear you saying something that I might need to attend to, and I tend to be ultra-sensitive. So could you further explain what you meant by that? Because I don't want to just assume you're being critical. I want to hear what you're having to say. So that would be an ultra-sensitive, acknowledging that they're very sensitive, acknowledging that they're trying to just stand still and listen. It also is you standing in your truth. So rather than jumping to taking it personally, cutting yourself down, collapsing inside, feeling depressed, going away feeling anxious, ruminating about it over and over and over again, including the I should have said, and oh my God, I didn't. And the ultra-sensitive will beat themselves up for days, weeks, years, for a long time. I've heard it a lot in my office. Hey, I've done it myself sometimes. So when you can stand in your truth, admit that you're an ultra-sensitive, recenter yourself into your own emotions and your own needs, and get you out of the equation in that moment, you will be a better friend, a better listener, a healthier person. You will stop putting yourself in to a place where your emotions cascade down and it takes you down and leaves you feeling overwhelmed and exhausted and depressed and anxious. So it becomes that the ultrasensitivity is more of a blessing and less of a burden. So this is something that you'll do. If you're an ultrasensitive, you will do this forever. You will continually recenter yourself, and you'll continually acknowledge that you tend to be ultrasensitive, and it will get easier over time. I would say at this stage in my life, I am much less likely to take something personally. I am much less hypervigilant to somebody saying something that I might be afraid of or something. And I stay much more centered more of the time. It's one of the reasons I really like teaching ultrasensitivity to little kids. Because wouldn't it be cool if you learn this at 6 or 7 years old? Like if you're in your 50s now and you learn this at 6 or 7 years old, you could have saved yourself years worth of grief. So I love teaching it to little kids and helping them learn how to understand it. I liked starting to teach it to my granddaughter when she was very young. And she can even talk about that now. So, and she still has a ways to go as being a child. She has to keep learning how to recenter this. But it's very cool to learn this at a young age and not become aware of it when you're older. But it's also never too late. So, I love watching older people all of a sudden have their eyes open up and they go, oh my gosh, I'm okay. I always thought I was weird or bad or too much or, you know, that I did too much emotion and I was always trying to put myself down and tell myself to cut it out and stop crying and cut, you know, just man up or whatever it was I needed to do. So let's just recap a little bit here right before we're done. If you are an ultrasensitive, it can be a blessing or a burden. It can be both. But what we want to do is make it more of a blessing. So you embrace it and you say, in what ways am I ultrasensitive? Where are my situations where I am most likely to lose myself into someone else's emotions? So know that. Then you want to begin to work on knowing where you end and the other person begins so that you can manage your sensitivity in a way that is gracious to you, that you accept yourself. And you even love that you're an ultrasensitive, and you wouldn't change it for the world. But you also know where you end and someone else begins. You know what are your monkeys to feed water and what are theirs. You give yourself permission to feel your emotions without shame. You learn how to hold the emotions in your hands and take a really deep look at them and figure out how they got there, whose they were, what were yours, what were the other person's. And when you've really experienced it and you've really kind of looked at it, then you can wash your hands and put it away. So I hope today that I've helped you know who you are a little bit more, embrace who you are with acceptance and with grace. You know, the whole idea of giving ourselves grace or giving another person grace is about accepting things that are difficult. It's easy to give someone grace when they are wonderful and loving and kind and knowledgeable and all this kind of stuff. True grace happens when we are challenged to give that grace. So what I'm encouraging you to do is to give grace to yourself, to say, this is who I am. I accept who I am. I no longer need to apologize for being sensitive, but I do need to learn how to manage it for myself, for my own mental health, so I'm not so exhausted all the time, and so that I become a healing force in the world, not somebody who meshes their own emotions with somebody else and then it gets all muddy. So I hope this makes sense to you, and I hope I've been able to help you a little bit, and I'd love your feedback. You can go to my podcast on the Anchor app at anchor.fm. You can download the app on your smartphone or your computer for free. It's a safe app. You can also go to Spotify, iTunes, many other podcast shows, and type in Dr. Patricia Bay, Therapy in a Nutshell. The podcast is free. Feel free to share it with anybody that you think it might help, because I'm doing Therapy in a Nutshell because I just want to help heal the world 1 hour at a time.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional.